Hello, everybody. Matt Bubala with you here on Radio 720 WGN. I am posting a photo of Roger right now to my show's Facebook page.
Thank you so much.
Old one-eye Roger.
Didn't we do a Pirates thing?
We did previously. B-A-D or B-A-E-D?
B-A-D.
B-A-D-E-S-C-H. Yeah. Doing the traffic on at WGN.
It's behind the scenes stuff. Shh, don't tell anyone.
Yeah. Okay. So if you want to go to Facebook and please like my Facebook page, The Matt Bubala Show.
Please do.
Then you can go ahead and see a wonderful picture of Roger delivering the traffic and the news with one squinty eye and one reflective lens.
I'm focusing more on the missing lens than I was about the reflective one. That's pretty cool. And now, see, now I had a needle-nose plier at home.
Uh-huh.
Took me a half an hour to do this. Because, you know, that little screw.
It's a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, they could put really big screws in your glasses, but then they'd look really odd. So,
you know, I may just do the geeky Scotch tape, which wouldn't be the first time.
It would be a real Les Nessman, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I've done it before.
Yeah, I imagine.
But I have trifocals, so I can see.
I thought you were making that up. So there are trifocals.
Yeah, yeah. Three different lenses. Driving, reading a book, and computer work.
All in one set of glasses.
Yeah.
And are they the lineless ones that are all blended together? You got a bunch of different lines.
You can kind of see the line down towards the bottom.
What's the highest amount of focals you could have in a glass? Are there quad focals?
I don't know.
Are there septuplet focals?
It could be. I would imagine that they could make any type of focals for you.
Well, how many focals could you need?
Well, if you're a fly, you might need... How many eyes do they have?
Hey, Marcia Clark was on Rose Show.
Yeah.
She looks really good.
Yeah.
I know that's a terrible thing to even say, but we just watched the whole OJ thing, and you think about that hair she had back in the day.
Right.
And all she went through about, you know, how she
and
looked
how many
and
years ago was that?
That's a long, it's over I 20
know.
Years ago. Right?
Yeah.
94, 04, 60, it's like 22 years ago.
Yeah.
1 years ago.
I saw the picture on Facebook on Rose on the show, and she looks fantastic.
It's at WGNradio.com right now, so you can check that out as well. As well as see One-Eyed Roger by going to Facebook and liking The Matt Bubala Show.
I think I got the... Now I just need...
You know
see,
what? You know
I
what?
Travel with the little screwdriver now. I don't leave home without
it. You get through TSA with that?
Huh? Well, thank God I don't fly anywhere. At least not on an airplane.
Okay.
So now I have to work trying to get the edge of it into the slit on the screw, which is even worse than trying to get the screw into... Never mind.
You're listening to Repair Your Glasses with Roger here on NPR. If you'd like to donate, please call. In the next segment of the show, Roger tries to get the tiny screwdriver to find the threads of the tiny screw.
Oh, God. How you been?
Better than this. I'll tell you what, there's 100,000 people on the road right now going, boy, I didn't miss this in the last 2 weeks. Where's Craig Collins? Bring him back. Where's Carm?
Oh, wow. So how's the baseball season going?
Oh, God, Roger. It's just... too much. I don't mean to bore everybody with our personal
That's
lives,
right.
But we have an older son who plays travel baseball and two young boys who play travel baseball and Little League baseball and a hazard dance recital this weekend.
Oh.
So all we do is drive places.
Yeah.
And Jack's team won tonight and the boys have a game tomorrow and Jack's got more games tomorrow. Tonight he was in Elmhurst. Tomorrow he's in Lyle. We're in some tournament that's in like five different locations.
Oh, good Lord.
But it's all fun. Good. It was nice outside tonight. It was hot.
Yeah.
And we found an Oberweis near the field. So me and Michael and Tommy got some Oberweis. The flavor of the month is black raspberry.
So I bet that was delicious.
It's a raspberry ice cream with chocolate chunks in it.
No fair.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. I'm not going to lie to you. It was
All
good.
Right.
It was good.
What else is going on? We you missed know, you so much.
Wow.
We
well,
did.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we
I mean,
were
we liked having the other guys, but we missed you.
Sure.
It was, after all, the Matt Bubala show.
It was. Did they mention that at all, Carmen?
In passing, once in a while.
They concentrated on the part about them, didn't they?
Yeah, it was all about them.
So last weekend I was in, where was I? We were in Holland, Michigan. I'd never been to Holland, Michigan.
Oh, it's a nice place.
Yeah, so it's right on the other side of the lake.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes about 2.5-ish hours to get there. Because you have to be very careful when you cross into Michigan. What is it, St. Joseph, Benton Harbor, that area?
Up in that area, right.
Mm-hmm. You will get arrested in a heartbeat if you're speeding. I lived in Detroit for a year, and every time I'd pass back and forth, somebody would be pulled over or I would be pulled over. I mean, it was like clockwork. They make their money there. So you got to be careful going through there. But it was a beautiful weekend up there. And then 2 weeks ago, we had a tournament in Dubuque, Iowa.
Ooh.
It was a Field of Dreams tournament.
No, you didn't.
We did.
Oh.
And here's the thing about going to the Field of Dreams. I talked about this. I filled in for Justin Kaufman on Memorial Day night, and that's when I had gotten back.
Oh, okay.
But here's the thing about the Field of Dreams. In May. You fill in that blank for me, Roger?
Huh? I'm sorry.
Why is it not a good time of year to go see the Field of Dreams?
Oh, mosquitoes? No.
Nope.
Oh, the corn. Oh, hay fever.
No corn. There's no corn. It's not grown yet. So you're pulling up and you're on the gravel drive you're thinking, oh, I see the house and here we come and there's the field and there's no corn.
Oh, jeez.
It's like little buds.
Did it really ruin it for you?
It didn't ruin it, but as I pull up, I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it's a baseball field.
Nobody's walking out of that onto the field, are they?
You were waiting.
Well, you want to go do that shot, right? You want to get, honey, hold the phone, videotape this. I'm going to come walking out of the
field. I'm going to walk in the field and come back
out. No, I'm going to walk between the little buds, and then it's not the same. It's nothing. It doesn't work.
Oh, geez.
So there was that, but it's gorgeous to be there and to think about the history of that movie and things like that.
Oh, you cry. You cry, don't you? Come on now. You
I
cry.
I haven't watched it all the way through in a long time. I cry. Listen, I cry at movies.
Yep.
I don't know if I cry at that one. I've watched it, Roger, so it would have hit me or not by now. I don't remember if I did. I don't know if I did.
When he goes into the speech, and then he wants to have a catch. Oh, God, I'm going to start crying now.
Well, I'll tell you what, I did do that with my oldest son, Jack. I said, come on, let's get in the outfield. Let's go have a catch. So, and he's about to turn 15 in 10 days, so it's not like he plays catch with me a lot anymore. That's not a thing for him.
Right.
So it was a nice moment to go out there and get to do that with Jack. Yeah, that was nice for me. Yeah. But that's a great movie, which I haven't watched in a long time, but I don't know that I cry at it. I cry at It's a Wonderful Life every year. I bawl my eyes out at that.
Okay.
I'm trying to think what other movies make me cry. I know there's a few.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful
There's a handful,
life,
too. I'd have to really sit and think about
it. Over them.
Yeah.
It's funny how we always start this show by just going in 18 different directions, isn't it?
Well, because I have a no-steel trap on my mind.
Speaking of steel traps, last time we talked, I believe I had reported on the squirrels running loose in our attic, right?
Yes.
It's such a sad situation in our house with these squirrels. Oh, there is a family of squirrels up in our attic. So basically what we think happens, what the wildlife control expert tells us is, in the spring, it sounds like squirrels hook up. And then they try to find a place to go nest and have these babies.
Mm-hmm.
So they found their way into our attic. We have one of those mushroom vents on one side of the attic.
Oh, yeah, on the roof, yeah, right.
So they got in through there.
Yeah.
And so he put a trap on the roof, thinking they'll come out. You know, they got to come out for food and other stuff so the adults can get back out there. And so one of the adults got caught in that. And then he opened up the soffit and put some traps there, like leading out of the soffit. It's like a little wired-in balcony for them to come walking out on. And he's caught a couple in there.
Ooh.
But then we still have more.
Okay.
I think we had five altogether. We're down to one left who we're not hearing anymore. So that's But so what would happen with, he had this trap hanging from the soffit, and I took video of this. It was great. It was right outside of our bedroom window. The squirrels learn to come out, walk through the trap, and then lift the door back up and go back in.
What?
They literally would take their little paws, lift it back up, crawl underneath, and go back in. So it just became like a screened-in three-season room for them. It was really nice. They'd come out. They'd enjoy the breeze. They'd hang out a little bit, sniff the air, see if there's anything good going on. And then they'd lift the door up and go right back in.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was interesting. And then they'd scuttle along in the eaves, so you hear that nice running everywhere.
These are educated squirrels.
I was impressed with them. I was like, you know what? These are circus squirrels. Somebody ought to capture these guys and go make some money with
them. Well, calm down for coffee and strike a deal with them.
These are the type of squirrels that end up on water skis and internet videos.
Yes.
Yeah. So I've been impressed with them. But sadly, we're down to one left. And now I'm not sure he's made it because we're not hearing him as much. What are you doing?
I'm trying.
Did you just shove it right in your eye like a monocle?
Yes, I did.
Maybe just scotch tape it to your head.
I've given up trying to screw in the screw. I've got to get the next newscast put together, and then I have to go find some scotch tape up here to tape the frame together and try to make this happen.
All right. I'm going to give you some time then. Go ahead and go prepare your newscast.
Sounds good.
We'll get back to you at our regularly scheduled time in about 5.5 minutes with the 2:30 news. Here's what's coming up on the show this morning. Your phone calls at any time you want, 312-981-7200. We'd be happy to hear from you on any of the crazy topics that have already been thrown forth, whether movies that you cry at, problems you've had with your glasses, problems with no corn at the Field of Dreams. I wonder if you've been out to the Field of Dreams, actually, and you have a good story about that. But we've got some really fun stuff we're going to do on the show tonight. One is we're going to talk, literally, Shantae found these people. Cuddlist.com is the website. There are professional cuddlers here in Chicago who you could hire for $80 an hour to come and cuddle with you. We'll find out what that's all about and if that's all legit and on the up and up or if there's something hanky going on there. We'll talk about that. And then also later in the show, Heidi Stevens, my favorite columnist from the Chicago Tribune, is going to jump on the phone with us. She has a very powerful piece online right now that'll be in your Sunday Tribune about whether or not to leave Chicago. She's living in Chicago. She's raising her kids in Chicago. They go to Chicago Public Schools. She loves so many aspects of living in the city, the diversity, the cultures, everything else. But a little girl was shot just a few blocks from her home a couple of days ago. And she's at the point where she's thinking, okay, how long do we stay with this? At what point does the benefit of living in the city, living near the museums, living near the lake, having all the diversity you want, at what point is that outweighed by the safety and security of feeling better about where your children are growing up? It's the Matt Bubala Show on Radio 720 WGN. We're talking cuddling later in the show, and a texter from the 262 says, I wonder if you guys could order up a cuddler who could stop at Office Max on the way over and get Roger some more tape.
That would be an additional service. I think there's extra charge.
I think there is an extra charge
for accessories.
Cuddlers are very, you know, you got to stick with the cuddling. Anything else? Waiting outside for cuddling,
yeah.
Buying tape, getting the little screwdriver, just fixing your little glasses.
Yeah.
That would be interesting if you ordered up a cuddler.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they got there, he said, you know,
I can't see where you are.
I'd like to cuddle, but could you fix my glasses first? And then, you know, you're like, and you know what? Yeah. That VCR just isn't working right. Can you take a look at that and just see? Because it keeps slipping over to Channel 3, but I see the snow. Yeah. I don't see the show that I want to watch. So could you check the VCR?
And use the same screwdriver you used to fix my glasses with.
And then they come back and you're like, I really would like to get down to the cuddling. But here's the thing. Every time I use the washroom, there's this like dripping sound afterwards, like that handle needs to, could you just take a look at that?
Jiggle the handle.
Just jiggle the handle and see if, is there some, you know, maybe bend the big ball in there that floats, thing so that it
that
comes up a little
right.
faster
yeah.
and, you know, gets that down. And then at the end, you're like, well, I know we're out of time, but let's just hug it out and then I'll pay your $80.
Hug it out.
You know, so there's a little cuddling.
Yeah.
There's a little hugging.
There's a little bit.
I think that's a way to use it.
But then
that.
would you wanna hug it out with your repair person?
Well, it wasn't. It was
not
my cuddler who just happened to help out.
Well,
but I'll tell you what, Roger.
Yeah.
If I get my glasses fixed, the VCR fixed, and the toilet fixed, my wife's going to give me some cuddling.
Ooh,
so I'll be in shape.
Yeah, there you go. And that's free.
Yeah. So maybe instead of spending $80 on a cuddler, I spend the $80 on a guy who'll come over for a couple hours and fix all the stuff that's broken in the house that I never fix.
That's why you're a genius.
And then I get the cuddling.
Yeah. You're a genius. God.
Interesting.
I'm just over here holding your coat, you know? That's
with one eye.
With one.
All right, hold on. So I've been gone for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Donald Trump's still running for president.
Last I checked, yeah.
Donald Trump is the presumptive Republican nominee.
Yes.
So the head of the grand old party running will be Donald Trump.
Right.
And And over the last couple of weeks while I've been gone, he's kind of gone back and forth where he's gotten in trouble for saying certain things. And then so at his next speech, he reads from a teleprompter and sounds kind of presidential and mm-hmm. makes promises that I'm never going to let you down and I'm going to do this right. And mm-hmm. and then, you know, goes back to being Donald Trump, it seems.
Right.
So the latest thing is, I believe it's in the, correct me where I go wrong here. So in the Trump University lawsuit, he's complaining about the judge being of Mexican ancestry.
Mm-hmm. Heritage.
What does mm-hmm. now? Okay, so it has nothing to do with the lawsuit and what it's about.
No,
he feels that because he has taken a stand on the border, mm-hmm. that this judge cannot be impartial.
Right.
Okay. So on the surface, you could say, well, yeah, I, you know what? I know that that sounds racist, and everybody's saying that's racist, mm-hmm. and I believe Paul Ryan defined it as the definition of a racist comment, right?
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, you could see what he's saying because, well, I've been really bad to Mexican people, so I think he's going to have a tough time being fair to me. That's like an honest judgment. Like, well, how could he be nice to me and be impartial when I've been so awful? He's not saying that, of course, but that's what he's intimating.
Yeah, but,
but
in that same premise, he's admitting that he's said bad things about Mexicans.
Well, he wouldn't say, I've said bad things about Mexicans. Mm-hmm. He would say, I took a tough stand against right. a wrong that's been done against America. Mm. That's what he'd say, Roger. That's what he'd say. But it's kind of like he's saying, hey, if I broke into your car and robbed you, and then the next week I was in your courtroom on an unrelated offense, you'd have trouble being fair to me. You're right, though. It is
interesting.
But then
that's him being presumptive that the judge was going to do something bad back.
Right.
You can't like.
But a judge would recuse himself in such a case. If I had mugged a judge.
Right.
And then 2 weeks later, I'm in court for an unrelated traffic ticket. I'd say, well, Your Honor, you must recuse yourself
exactly.
from this case. Right. I just robbed you last week.
Yeah, but he didn't specifically attack that specific judge.
Yeah, that's interesting. If Trump had been really forthright and said, listen, I have maligned your whole heritage. You can't be fair in this case. Then the judge might have to go, well, you might have something there. But he's just saying that's interesting. He is trying to play both sides of the fence, isn't he? Because he's not going to admit he's done anything wrong, but he's going to say, because of the whole wall thing, you can't be fair.
Yeah.
So he did that. And so that's gone back and forth. And then, so Elizabeth Warren, in announcing her support of Clinton, just tore Trump apart, right?
Mm-hmm.
She had this great speech. Now, I don't understand. He's referring to her as Pocahontas.
Right. Apparently.
She's the whitest woman I've seen outside of Hillary.
Apparently, in her heritage, there is some American Indian. And that's where the Pocahontas comes from.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's. What the hell is he doing?
Asking me.
Because I understand the Lion Ted. Or what's Hillary's moniker now that he's invented for? Is it Dishonest Hillary?
Yeah, something along those lines.
No, it's... Oh, God, what is it?
It's Dishonest.
Is it Dishonest Hillary? There was Lion Ted. There was... he's got something for everybody, I know.
Right, right.
But Pocahontas? What the hell is he doing?
That's, again... when I first heard that, I go... I had the same reaction. But then I started reading the news stories, and the news stories were reporting that in her heritage, there is... some lineage of American Indian.
One of the senator's supporters secured Pocahontas.com and redirected it to Warren's campaign website. So she is like buying in. She's like, all right, I'm Pocahontas. Bring it on, Trump.
God.
You know, this campaign makes me think sometimes that Trump's out there and he gives his speeches for the day and he sends out his nasty tweets and he does whatever he does. And then, like, he ends up in a tavern at night with, like, three other guys.
Yeah.
And they're all talking. And they're like, well, you know what would really kill your campaign? You know what you should do? I dare you. I dare you. Why don't you start calling Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas if you're so tough? If everything bows up. You know what? Fine. I'll do it.
Yeah.
I'll show you. I'll do it. And I'll go up 3 more points in the polls.
Yeah.
And then he's like, screw it. Pocahontas. Yeah. Hey, Pocahontas. Ha, ha, ha. And then he gets to the bar that night. And he's like, I told you I'd do it. And the guy's like, man, you really did it, man. It seems like it's Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure running for president right now.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
How does he start calling her Pocahontas?
I don't know. How does he say he's never been one to hold back?
I know, but
I don't want to pass judgment one way or the other. I'm a news guy. I've got to stay impartial. But some of the rhetoric, even If it was dog catcher, yeah, I could see it. But it's for the presidency of the United States of America.
Yeah, it's kind of a big job. And it's almost like sometimes it's like, does he really want it? Or is he trying to
make sure? I think he really wants it. Oh, yeah.
Well, when he says things like this, you're like, well, now here's the thing. Yeah. You could see him not really wanting it.
No, he really wants it. He does.
Maybe. But why? But why? I mean, do you think when he started this, he ever thought he'd really get this?
He's a successful
businessman.
He is.
And this is going to hamper
everything he's done.
This is going to severely hamper that. Now, maybe he's like, maybe he really believes he's going to fix America and he's going to leave his mark in the world. And maybe this is what he really wants for his legacy. But Donald Trump seems to me to be really about the money. And unless he figures that this is going to help, and I don't see how taking 4 to 8 years off of your career helps you, because he's not going to be able to work the business angles.
He doesn't have to. He's got a family taking care of it for him.
You know he doesn't trust those kids to really run the business.
Sure. Why not?
Donald Trump is not the type that takes his hands off things and just lets people run things. I don't believe that. I think that it will be, if he gets elected president, there will be a lot of consternation about the fact that he's not going to put those businesses in blind trust or do any of that. And he's not going to take his hands completely off of it. I guarantee you he'll say something like, I built up this company over all these years and I'm going to serve as president, but I'm also going to keep my eye on the ball for the good of my family and the good of this country. He won't completely give up that stuff, just like he hasn't given up his tax returns.
Yeah. But is there a law that says you have to give up your tax returns?
There is
if
not.
You're running?
There is not. It's only tradition. It's been
tradition
since Watergate.
Sure.
And he's thumbing his nose at tradition.
Well, he's been thumbing his nose at a lot of things.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And now the latest is Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
He, after she kind of went on the attack against him, he tweeted, Pocahontas is at it again. Goofy Elizabeth Warren, one of the least productive U.S. senators, has a nasty mouth.
Wow.
At a rally Friday night in Richmond, Virginia, Trump repeatedly called Warren Pocahontas, prompting some in the crowd to break out in Indian war cries.
Oh, great.
So that'll fit in well, because the Republican convention's in Cleveland, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he'll have Chief Wahoo
from the
come up on stage from the Cleveland Indians.
Right.
And then they'll do some type. They'll bring the Atlanta Braves tomahawk chop.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll just, you know.
Wow.
For Trump, this is odd. And I know that's crazy to say that something is odd for Trump, but I can't think of another attack he's done. The whole thing about the judge, I can understand.
Right. But he's born in Indiana. The judge was born in Indiana.
He didn't just climb underneath the wall.
Yeah.
He's not hanging out with El Chapo. He's an American.
He's an American
who happens
born
to be of Mexican descent.
Right.
So it would be like if Trump had made some nasty remark about Hungary and I couldn't be the judge anymore, even though my grandparents' grandparents, I think, came over from Hungary.
Yeah.
He would say that. Yeah. Yeah. That is funny. I bet he hadn't thought that part through.
I don't think he cared.
Yeah, maybe not. But even this is still so like, what are you doing? Because that's so clearly a derisive kind of racial comment to call her Pocahontas.
Right.
You're making fun of her having Indian ancestry.
No, you're making
Native
fun
American
of
American ancestry.
Native Americans. Period.
I don't get it. I think he should start hanging out with Brock Turner's dad.
Oh, God.
Because
Lord.
They just, you know, don't think through what they say and then say whatever they want and then say, oh, that's not how I meant it. He's calling her Pocahontas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I heard about this and I saw people tweeting about Pocahontas and how bad things are. And I'm like, well, I just never thought this is what this was going to be. And is it ever to a point where people who are voting for him go, yeah, you know what? I just can't do this. Or do the people he has right now just whatever? Maybe he's right. He could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and it still wouldn't, you know, hurt him.
I think so. I just, there's no rhyme or reason to the whole thing, in my opinion. There's no rhyme or reason to the whole thing. He is playing this the way he wants to play it, as he would any negotiation with competition, as he would with his own family, as he would with anyone, because that's what he does. Even when he, even before he got into the game show thing, the reality show, this is the kind of person he was, and he has not changed himself. He doesn't apologize for anything.
Oh, no. He does not apologize.
No.
What's interesting is that while GOP leaders really came out about the judge, and Paul Ryan said it's a definition of a racist comment, they're not strongly rebuking him for this on Elizabeth Warren. Now, maybe that's because that was about a judge, mm-hmm. and this is about a Democrat. So whatever you say is fair game. We'll back you on that one. Lindsey Graham from South Carolina, who's been a pretty tough on Trump, mm-hmm. says, it's pretty funny, I thought. I think what he said about the judge was racist. But when you're talking about a politician, you got to be able to take a joke. If this bothers you, you need to get out of politics.
Wow.
I think this is worse than the judge thing. Yeah, and maybe it's not, but I don't know. I mean, at least you can understand where he thinks. You know, listen, people are defensive of their heritage. Whether mm-hmm. I've been an American here for 40 years or 100 years or whatever it's been, if I'm a good Irishman or I'm from Italy, mm-hmm. there are certain nationalities, Polish and German. I'm Hungarian and Slovak, and it's not like I have a real identity for that. But okay. I think there are certain heritages that people stay steadfast to, and no matter how long they've been in America, mm-hmm. they're an American. But, you know, I'm of Mexican descent. I have that background, and I love my country, and I love where my people come from. And so in a way I could see if you really offend somebody's heritage, then right. they're going to be offended.
Sure.
So I can kind of buy into that one, as crazy as it is. But this one, this is, I think, insanely offensive, because there's no like, oh, well, I call her Pocahontas because of these. There's no like, and here's my reason why.
Right. He never explains it. He doesn't care.
Oh, yeah. Hey, how about I call her Pocahontas? Isn't that funny?
Yeah, he's a great self-promoter.
And he's a big bully. And that's the biggest problem. No matter how much you maybe would agree with a policy or whatever he stands for, or maybe you think America needs to be made great again, it can't be by being the biggest bully in the world. And that's all he is just this big, nasty bully. He's the kid at school all the other parents would be upset about. People would be going to the principal and talking to mm-hmm. the principal, saying, this child needs to be stopped. This child is tormenting the other kids. This child is mean to everybody. That's what he is. He calls people names.
But see, that doesn't change. If you keep doing that, having been a teacher for a while and having gone through several of those issues, that doesn't change unless you get back into the re-education of that person or that child. You can't just say what you're doing is wrong and then not go into some sort of education as to why that is wrong and help them to learn a different way. Okay? And so what's happening with Trump, I think, is everyone's saying, you said that she lambasted him in a response back, and then Hillary said, delete your account and everything. So we're saying these things, like we're pointing out, you know, what you're doing is bad, what you're doing is bad. But yet we're not stepping in there with him, or his GOP cohorts are not stepping in there with him and say, hey, Don, come over here. Let's sit down. Here, draw a picture where you think you got hurt. Where someone hurt you when you were a kid? Did they hit you in the shoulder? How did that make you feel? You know, that kind of a thing. That's not going to happen. He's going to keep bullying. He's going to keep doing this. Why? He can do it. And he doesn't care what anyone else says.
So when asked why he's calling her Pocahontas, he said, because she's a nasty person, a terrible U.S. senator, and it drives her crazy. The Republicans should find it offensive that she scammed the system by faking her heritage, not that I am unafraid to point that out. Actually, Goofy Elizabeth, her nickname, is far worse. So what's this about him saying she faked her heritage? Did she say she's part? See, we'll have to look at
her heritage. Yeah, I've never heard that.
That's what he's saying.
I didn't hear that.
Trump has repeatedly rejected the notion he's playing to racial fears in his campaign, saying, quote, I am the least racist person that you've ever encountered. In 1993, he created an uproar at a House subcommittee hearing by testifying that, quote, organized crime is rampant in Indian casinos around the nation. At the time, the developer was fighting the expansion of gambling on tribal lands, of course, a direct threat to his casino empire. Now, it's just another interesting... We have until November, Roger, till November.
Well, you can say anything you want, but you can't say it's not entertaining.
That's true. That's true. And maybe in some weird way, Donald Trump is going to give us reasons to have conversations that will be good down the road for this country.
Right. And you know what my biggest complaint has been about elections?
Too boring?
No.
Oh.
Nobody is turning out.
What will we have here? That's an interesting thought, Roger, and we'll have to take a break for the news in a second here. Okay. But what will we have here? What's your prediction? Will we have the largest turnout in U.S. history or one of the weakest turnouts in modern times?
I think that we're going to have a larger turnout for several reasons. One, Donald Trump. And two, Hillary Clinton. And I think because of their positions, because of the, dare I say it, even though a lot of, and I've been reading a lot of stuff posted by women on my Facebook page, not directed at me, but just their postings that I get on my news feed, about how that it's not necessarily historic because other women have been nominated prior to this for presidency and for vice president. So that step has not been historic, but the fact that she could eventually become president of the United States is historic. I think that will pull out voters, bring voters out. I think that his rhetoric and the reasons why people are following him in ever-increasing numbers will also bring out more voters. Will it reach 60%? Because, you know, it's been low. Last election, it was low. Last presidential election was low. It was higher than for President Obama's first election. But then it went down 4 years ago.
Yeah.
I think this one's going to pick back up. It's going to jump over 50% again, I think.
We've got the news here in a second. Real quick, Cindy was on hold for a while. Cindy, what did you want to say? Good morning. You're on 720 WGN.
Thinking of a title for him, and I came up with The Abominable Showman.
The Abominable Showman, Donald Trump. That's a good one. Thank you so much,
Cindy. Do you realize the damage he could do in 4 years?
I hesitate. Thank you very much for the call, Cindy. I really appreciate it. I hesitate to think. I would like to think that our system of checks and balances would prevent some of the damage, but I do believe we would have, I mean, they're not going to hear Merrick Garland, it looks like, so we're going to have a Supreme Court nominee coming up immediately that would have Trump's stamp on it, and God knows what else we would have. But somebody is telling us, Roger, the Hispanic judge, this is from a texter at 630, the Hispanic judge on the Trump case has ties to La Raza as an activist for them, so he should recuse himself from Trump's case. Trump only rails against illegal aliens. Pay attention and take your meds, boys. Be fair. Quit being whiny liberals. Ha! Take that, Roger! One-eyed! Take that, old one-eye!
One-eye whiner.
Goofy one-eye is going off on Trump again.
Okay, so real quick, we're going to get to the news here in a second, Roger, but I'm getting yelled at by texters for not knowing my stuff.
Oh.
So I found a ABC News article from May 31st, 2012. There was a controversy a few years ago about Elizabeth Warren and her heritage. After weeks of controversy, Massachusetts Democratic Senate candidate Elizabeth Warren said on Wednesday night that she did indeed tell the University of Pennsylvania and Harvard University that she was Native American, but she stipulated that the notification occurred only after she was hired by the two schools. Quote, I let people know about my Native American heritage in a national directory of law school personnel. At some point after I was hired by them, I also provided that information to the University of Pennsylvania and Harvard, Warren said in a statement. My Native American heritage is part of who I am. I'm proud of it, and I've been open about it. The statement marks the first time Warren has explicitly stated that she self-identified as Native American to the law schools where she has been employed. And I think that the underlying tone here is you're trying to get special treatment. They need to hire diversely, and this looks good. And so if I mention that, you know, I'm 1/120th Cherokee, then maybe that helps you get a job. Warren has received a great deal of criticism since the story first emerged, in large part because no documentation has been found to back up Warren's claim that she is indeed of Native American ancestry. Warren's great-great-great-grandmother, O.C. Sarah Smith, was referenced as Cherokee Indian on her son William Crawford's 1894 marriage license application. A 2006 family newsletter showed the document itself was not an actual marriage license, and it has not been located, according to genealogists at the New England Historic Genealogical Society. Warren also addressed the questions surrounding her lack of documentation in her statement. She says, growing up, my mother and my grandparents and my aunts and uncles often talked about our family's Native American heritage. As a kid, I never thought to ask them for documentation. What kid would? But that doesn't change the fact that it is part of who I am and part of my family heritage. Well, and this was when she was running. She clearly got elected and has done okay otherwise. But I don't know the veracity of this.
Yeah.
I don't know if that ever got settled or if this is another birth certificate issue that Donald Trump is going to label on somebody.
Oh, man.
And we'll talk about that then for the next however long he wants to. It's the Matt Bubala Show on Radio 720 WGN. Shantae finds me the most interesting guest, I have to say. When we chat during the week, she always comes up with things that I shake my head at and think, okay, Shantae, all right, let's do this. Joining us on the phone right now is Adam Lippin. He is the co-founder, the CEO of Cuddlist.com. Yes, folks, it's very entrepreneurial. It is a company that focuses on our need to be cuddled and our want and desire, I imagine, for some human interaction. Hey, Adam, how are you doing?
Good, Matt. How are you?
Good. Is that a good basic idea of how this got started? I imagine that in this world we live in today, we're so connected electronically to everything, less face-to-face communication, less contact with the world. Do some people just need some human touch?
You said it absolutely perfectly. And at this point in our culture, if you need human touch and you're not in a relationship or you're not in the dating pool or dating someone, there's really no way to get healthy human touch. So this is a service that we have professional cuddlers that you can have a session with to give you safe, consensual healing touch. Exactly.
Okay. So I'm going to take this very seriously because it's a serious thing. It's a business and it's legitimate. I've been on the website, cuddlist.com. You can check through the certified cuddlers who are available and make appointments and do what, Adam, when you get together with a cuddlist, you know, because it's weird, you know, I'm still a 13-year-old boy at heart. So you imagine where my mind is going here, right? That, you know, once we start touching, things will happen. How does it work? How does it get set up? Where do you go? And how does a session go?
Okay, so very quickly. So as you said, there are certified and trained professional cuddlers on cuddlist.com, and we take that very seriously, and we want to take out the any sort of notion that this is anything other than a warm, energetic, healing, cuddling session. So people can go to our website, and we have bios and really detailed information about all of the cuddlers on our site. We have amazing people in Chicago, cuddlers in Chicago, and they can request a session, and during a session, whatever the client is looking for, as long as it agrees to the code of conduct, the cuddler's job is to help the client understand what he or she is looking for and how to give them a great session.
And tell me about the code of conduct. I imagine there's, you know, things about touching certain areas, things like that.
Yeah, it's pretty basic. The first one is rule, you know, you wear at least a pair of shorts and a t-shirt. There's no touching of any area that would be covered by a bathing suit. And that's really it. So in the context of, you know, and no exchange of saliva. So within the context of that, you know, close down, there is no genital touching. then the what happens in the session is completely open to the cuddler and the client, as long as it meets that code of conduct.
Okay. And so, I mean, do you normally travel to the cuddler's location? Do they come to you? How does that work?
Yeah, so it's completely up to the client, basically. They can have someone come to their home, or they can go to the certified cuddler's place, or maybe meet at a neutral place like a local spa where we have relationships with that, you know, neutral setting.
Okay. And, you know, I'm guessing this mostly then becomes spooning of some sort, or is it not always laying down? Is it sometimes sitting and hugging? What do we describe or define as cuddling?
Yeah, so what you just said is absolutely right. So what would happen is you would request a session, and when you have a session, your cuddlist will ask you basically what you're looking for and help you discern, you know, figure out, if you don't know, like, what kind of touch you like and don't like and what it is you need for that session. So for some clients, it could look like a full-on spooning session for an hour. For others, depending on someone's needs, it could be hand-holding, it could be putting your arm around your shoulder, or it could be conversation. It could be a combination of all of those things.
Hmm. And how long have you been in business? I mean, how did you come up with this idea?
So we've been in business since November of 2015, and I came up with this idea because I believe that human touch is an essential healing modality, and that we don't get enough of it. As a child and a baby and a child, we get all the touch needs that we need. Our need for touch doesn't change as we get older, but our access to touch changes. And there's a lot of loneliness. Over 52% of the people in cities live alone as adults. And there are people out there that could just use some tender, loving care. And if you're lonely, if you've been recently divorced, if you, you know, have any sort of needs around touch that you're not getting, this is a safe, wonderful way to do it.
Does it? How do the sessions usually go? Like, on average, do people end up just wanting to lay and be held? Do people end up spilling out their guts? And in essence, they're looking also for somebody to talk to. I know they're not therapists. They're not trained to be that. But I imagine if you start talking, that they're listening and talking to you as well.
Yeah, every is different. So, like, some have a lot of physical touch. And some sessions, some people, it depends on what the client needs. If the client needs to talk or work through some stuff, the cuddlist is trained to be completely present for that person and to allow them to express whatever they need to express. Or some people don't want to talk, and some people, everyone is different. Really, it's up to the client's needs. And as long as we stay within the boundaries of the code of conduct, the session can be very varied.
We're speaking with Adam Lippin. He is the co-founder and the CEO of Cuddlist.com. Cuddlist.com. There are cuddlers available right here in the Chicago area. How do we become a cuddler if that's something we think we're good at and we'd like a job? We'll ask Adam that next. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. It's the Matt Bubala Show on Radio 720 WGN. We're speaking with Adam Lippin. He's the co-founder of Cuddlist.com. Cuddlist.com. You can hire somebody to come to you, or you can go to them and sit and cuddle for an hour. Adam, I'm looking on the website in the Chicago area. I see 7 people, 5 female, 2 male, and it looks like is $80 an hour a standard fee, or does it depend on the cuddler and what they charge?
No, that's the standard fee.
Okay, so $80 an hour, and there's not, you know, there's 7 people here in Chicago, but as this grows, you're going to need more cuddlers. So if somebody's like, I'm such a good cuddler, people always told me what a good cuddler I am, how do I get a job with Adam so I can start sharing my love of cuddling?
Well, thank you for asking. So if you go to the website, cuddlist.com, we have a tab that says Get Certified. And my co-founder and our director of training, Madeline Guanazzo, is in Chicago. And she's amazing. And all of the information that you need in terms of what the requirements are listed on the site.
Oh, so that's who I was looking at. Madeline, she can train you to become a cuddler, as well as she is a cuddler herself.
She's a certified cuddler. She runs our training program. It's a brilliant, wonderful training program. We have people that go through the training program that don't want to even be cuddlers, professional cuddlers, but you learn so much about consent and boundaries and holding space for people and self-care, how to run a session. It's really great in and of itself.
And when you go through training to become a cuddler, what are you learning? Just the proper ways to touch people or how to listen to what they want? Or
well, so a basic requirement would be if you need to be someone who's empathetic, who can really understand and be a really good active listener, and yet not take on someone else's emotional issues, but be present for them to have them. So what we go through is everything from consent and boundaries and self-care and how to be present for someone. And we do practicums. And so it's less about sort of how to touch, because that sort of becomes very intuitive. But it's really about setting the conditions so that when a client walks in the door, or they walk into a door of a client, they are fully present and fully available for that experience.
Now, when I'm on Madeline's page, so any cuddler that you're thinking about hiring, you get a page that describes them, what they've done, some photos of them, so you get a sense of who you're going to be with. And at the bottom in the skills and specialties, it says she is a cuddle party facilitator.
Yes. So I'm also a cuddle party facilitator. And if you go to cuddleparty.com, you can see what that is. But essentially, where Cuddlist provides one-on-one cuddling sessions, Cuddle Party is a group cuddling experience. So it's sort of like we call it a communication workshop that uses touch as the medium. And so it's a group of people that get together. We go through a workshop and we have a cuddle session. We do group cuddling for 3 hours. Great. And Madeline runs amazing ones in Chicago, and we're all over the Midwest as well and all over the country.
So in a cuddle party, do they all end up cuddling together? Like it's like a drawer full of spoons.
So the cuddle party has the same rules as Cuddlist in the sense that, you know, both stay on the whole time. You must ask and receive a verbal yes before you touch anyone. And you can say no to anything you don't want at any time. So within the context of the rules, people can do whatever they want to do as long as they get complete consent prior to it.
And how often do people put together cuddle parties? And is it like a group of people saying, hey, let's have a cuddle party? Or is it a bunch of strangers who are all looking to cuddle in a more group atmosphere?
So it's a fairly organized program, and some people come all the time, and some people come for, you know, so there's usually, I guess, an etiquette of party. About half the people have been there before and half the people are new to it. And it's really a wonderful way to, you know, have human interaction on a very real deep level. So when you're actually, you know, communicating with touch, it's stripped through all of the other nonsense and all of our sort of walls that we build up. It's really honest communication.
Well, it's amazing. And how can I ask from the business side, as an entrepreneur starting a company like this, how well does that work? I mean, I know you're kind of have contractors in all these places and things like that, and you have to certify people. Has it been very tough to launch, or are you finding there's such a need for this that it's harder to keep up with demand?
It's been amazing. It's sort of like that movie with Kevin Costner, if you build it, they will come. I think there's such an intuitive understanding for the need for human connection. We're all social beings. A lot of us do not get that need met. And so it sort of took off from day one. And so we put together very quickly this training program that Madeline's been tweaking on an ongoing basis. I have a pretty strong business background and a really good ability to put, you know, business systems together to support the infrastructure and people coming in. And Madeline takes care of the community. We have a wonderful way that all the certified cuddlers can communicate with each other. And we have, you know, it's really a great community.
Well, it sounds fascinating. I'd be certainly curious to talk to somebody who's gone through a cuddling session themselves. But it's really neat. And how old is the business, and how far are you hoping to expand? I mean, are you actively seeking more cuddlers to be available for work?
We are. So any of your listeners are interested, please go to our website, get certified. And if you're interested in having a session, please go to cuddlist.com. And we're expanding across the country. We've actually are also expanding in England right now. And our goal is to make, you know, non-sexual healing, cuddling, touch available to anyone who needs it, anywhere in the world. So, you know, we're starting at where we're at now. But the plan is good, consistent growth going forward.
And when you want to become a certified cuddler, do you pay a fee to go through the training, or how does that work?
Yes. Right now it's $79 to go through the training, and that's what it costs you. And then to be listed on our site, if we approve you, it's $29.99 a month. So that's the cost of the cuddler, and then all of the $80 goes directly to them. So right now we're not taking a cut or a percentage.
All right. Sounds great. You can find out more at Cuddlist.com. Adam Lippin, co-founder, thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us.
Thank you so much, and have a wonderful day.
I do want to try to take this seriously for a couple of minutes and take a couple of calls. I want you to call in and tell me. We do live in a world where either we're maybe some of our listeners out there, you're too addicted to your phone, you're too out of touch with humans. We don't look up in the coffee shops. We tend to have dinner watching TV or looking at a tablet or looking at a phone. Or maybe you're older and you've been on your own for some time. Maybe your spouse passed away or you're just, you know, not interacting as much with humans as you would like. Would you like the idea of just having somebody to come over and kind of talk and hold you? I mean, that sounds kind of nice, doesn't it? It doesn't sound that bad. But as I was telling Patty earlier, when she said, would you do this? I was like, I don't know, because I do feel like it's just a rung below hiring an escort. You know, I mean, right. I know there's not supposed to be any sexual stuff going on here. However, you know, he said at the minimum you have to wear, you know, a bathing suit type outfit. So it's not like, you know, we're in sweatpants and a sweatshirt here.
Right.
There's skin touching and feeling. Yeah. And
I would feel creepy about that if it was someone I didn't know. I know the healing effects of hugging.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that. I believe in that.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's someone you don't know and it's on a paid basis?
Does it feel quite the same?
No. It would be one of those, you know, how you hug someone you don't know.
They're giving you the one shoulder, kind of shooting into your arm.
Well, no, it's that
a bro
reaching,
hug.
It's that
dude,
reaching
I didn't pay
out
80
and,
bucks for a bro hug. Come on
yeah,
now.
Right. No. It would be way too creepy and way too inappropriate.
Well, maybe that training that they go through really helps them to, you know,
it could
make
be.
You feel comfortable
could
and
be.
Chat with you and, you know, maybe it'll...
You know, anything, so. I'm one of these believers, anything's possible.
I don't see how you tell the missus, hey, honey, you know, I'm going to have some cuddling today.
Yeah, no, she's going to say, you can cuddle yourself out right out the door, buddy.
You know what's funny is my wife would probably be like, that's fine. And then I'd say, but it's going to cost $80. What the hell do you think you're spending $80 on? You ain't spending $80 on cuddling.
Right.
I'll tell you that much. There's drywall that needs to be fixed and a leaky toilet. So unless your cuddler's coming over and fixing all that, you're not spending $80. You'd be like, but honey, now you see why I need cuddling.
There's cuddling, and she smacks you upside the head.
Here, you want cuddling. Bam. Here's your cuddling. There's more where that came from. 312-981-7200. Would you ever go in for this? Would you ever say, you know what? I could use a hug. It's fine. And from a stranger. And, you know, maybe I don't want a hug from at home because, you know, we're up and down or whatever. I don't know. 312-981-7200. Call or text. Let us know after the news if you would go in for $80 for an hour of professional.
Wait, is that an hour long hug? Or can you
well,
do like a quick hug
you.
And then...
That's up to you.
Oh,
as he
okay.
said, you
All
tell
right.
them what you need.
I got you.
And as long as it's within the code of conduct, they'll provide the service. Because I needed that for the music. The music doesn't just come on, Roger.
I know.
The music
know.
Wants to hear the clothes. It's 3:39 in the morning. Can you tell? Matt Bubala with you on Radio 720 WGN. Talking cuddling.
Oh, that is kind of cuddling.
Cuddlist.com. Shantae has this on the playlist when her cuddler comes over. I'm really, Shantae does not like to talk on the radio, which is fine. Shantae doesn't have to talk on the radio. But now I can say anything I want about Shantae because she doesn't jump on the radio to defend herself. So I can tease her about her cuddling music.
Yeah, she makes you pay for it later, though.
Probably. But, you know, I'm married, so I understand how that works.
Okay.
312... Oh, okay. Somebody just gave me my Trump insult. Thank you very much, 773. I'm the loudmouth of Europe.
That's it. The loudmouth. Oh, I see. Okay, because you're
European. Let's put something in there.
The loudmouth
of Europe.
There you go.
Matt Bubala, the loudmouth of Europe, the one of the worst radio hosts ever. Yeah, I could hear it.
Yeah.
I could hear it. I like it.
You're a loudmouth.
The loudmouth of Europe. It's a little wordy for Donald. He likes the one-word insult.
Right.
Lion Ted, Crooked Hillary, Pocahontas Warren. But the loudmouth of Europe. Yeah. I think he'd go the Slovak something. I need another S.
He's not getting into really nasty slurs.
Not
you
yet.
You understand what I'm saying?
Well, Pocahontas is a little rough.
Yeah.
I don't think that anybody of Native American heritage appreciates that. I mean, he didn't say Redskin. You know,
no.
He could go with that one.
We
or
went
something
Pocahontas
like that.
And half the country, I think, probably thought, ooh, Disney.
Yeah, which is another problem that I believe the Native Americans would have with that.
Oh, right, right.
Charlotte is on 720 WGN. Good morning, Charlotte. How are you?
I'm okay. What is Donald Trump's heritage?
That's a good question. Is it
I thought
Scottish
it was
or Irish?
German. It was,
well, no, it's
Trump wasn't his...
Trump is not the family's true last
name. I think
it
was Strumpf.
It's Drumpf. It's D-R-U-M-P-F. John Oliver, by the way, from HBO's This Week with John Oliver, did a great expose on how the Trump family's name changed to Trump over the years. It was Drumpf when they came over, but I can't remember where it was from. You think German, Roger?
I think it's German.
Drumpf sounds German,
yeah.
That's for sure. But I'm not sure, Charlotte. Charlotte, what's your ethnicity?
German, Dutch, and English.
So when I think of Dutch, I just think of the dams and the dikes and things like that. So there's a whole route he could go down there. English, German's too easy because you've got the horrible history with World War II. So there's all sorts of awful things somebody could say. English, what would you say about, what would he say to somebody English?
Crooked teeth.
You know what? You're a tea drinking Charlotte. Tea drinking Charlotte. How about that?
I do drink a lot of tea.
See, that's what I thought. That's what I thought. Here she goes again. Tea drinking Charlotte. There is your Trump insult for the morning, Charlotte. Charlotte, can I ask you a question? Would you ever hire a professional cuddler?
I don't think so.
No?
Feel too weird to have some stranger? To me, that is borderline prostitution.
That's what I said. That's when Patty said, I'm like, I feel like that I'm just a step away, like I'm crossing a boundary that I'm not coming back from. Like then next week I'm going, well, for an extra 100, what the heck? I don't want to be that guy.
You know, well, not only that, it says, you know, you can only touch certain areas. Well, if you're both consenting adults and you go beyond those limits, who's going to know?
Well, that's true. That could happen, I suppose. But I'm going to, you know, take his word for it that these are professional cuddlers, and if they wanted to get into that other side business, they'd just do that on their own and not under the guise of cuddling, would be my guess. I mean, you're only paying $80 for the hour. You're not paying $1,000.
Well, on my budget, that's too much.
I hear you, Charlotte. Well, I'll tell you what, next time you're downtown in the middle of the night, come by, I'll just give you a hug for free. How about that?
Okay.
All right, Charlotte. Have a great morning. Thanks so much for calling in. We appreciate it. 312-981-7200.
I've got the ancestry of your Donald Trump here on Ask.com.
Okay.
This is from March 2nd of this year. With German ancestry from his father, Scottish ancestry from his mother, millionaire real estate developer Donald Trump epitomizes the American immigrant experience. Born to Frederick and Mary McLeod Trump in Queens... On June 14th, ooh, did we miss his birthday? We missed his birthday. Oh, no,
no,
a couple more days. 1946, Donald Trump learned the real estate business firsthand from his father, who himself began in the family construction business at the age
He's going to turn 70 next week.
Yeah.
Wow. I thought he... I'm going to give him credit. With that hair and that orange skin, yeah. I thought he was much younger.
He's been preserved. He's been pickled.
Pickled Donald Trump. That's what Hillary's got to start writing. Pickled Trump.
Yeah, there you go.
Here goes Pickled Trump again.
His grandfather died in the influenza epidemic in 1918. He emigrated to America in 1885. This is his grandfather, Frederick Christ Trump. He began his fortune running the Arctic Restaurant and Hotel in Bennett, British Columbia during the Gold Rush. Christine, who would later become his wife, was only 5 when he left Germany, but they kept in touch by mail and eventually married. So
Texter has amended my nickname to the Slovakian loudmouth.
There you go. Well, that makes sense.
Slovakian loudmouth. I like that. Or somebody else gave me Matt the Rat. Matt the Rat, that would rhyme. I don't know if Donald rhymes often, but that one would rhyme.
Matt the Rat, that's pretty good.
Matt the Rat. 773 wants to know if there would be a senior citizen discount for the hugging service. There might be. I bet you should ask the hugger.
Especially maybe if your arthritis doesn't allow you to totally...
Maybe you get $5 off.
Yeah. Special, June special. A Father's Day special.
It's worth asking about.
Yeah. If you don't ask, you'll never know.
618 is asking for some equal time about Crooked Hillary. I would give Crooked Hillary equal time if Crooked Hillary had made disparaging comments about somebody, you know, that was attacking her.
Right.
But when she's attacked about Benghazi and all these other things, she tries to defend herself. And I'm not taking a side on that. You believe whatever you want. That's fine. But I don't believe she's come back and tried to individually attack all the people accusing her of wrongdoing. That's why we're talking about Donald. This is part of his craziness that gets him in the press all the time and makes us talk about him so much.
Yeah.
Because he does these things that other candidates don't do. And Kasich didn't do it, and Cruz didn't do it, and Ted didn't do it. The only times they ever did it was about Trump himself. But nobody ever does what he's doing. So I'm not going to give her equal time because she's not doing equal things.
True.
Now, here's what I will say. All right, you want your love for Crooked Hillary? Here you go. Or your dislike of Crooked Hillary? Here you go. I didn't want to believe this was true, but it appears that it is because I'm seeing it in more and more news services.
Okay.
She makes a speech about inequality. I think it was in New York City. I'm not 100% sure. Maybe it was in California this last week. Big speech. I don't know if it was all about inequality, but there was at least a portion of it about inequality in America. She's wearing a $12,000 jacket or suit coat or whatever, it appears.
I saw that.
As she gives the speech.
Yeah.
That's a mistake.
Yeah.
Oops. Somebody within the campaign needs to go, you know, as you're being a woman of the people here, let's not do that. Because even if a guy's wearing a great suit, is it more than a $1,000 suit?
You don't know. I'm sure
but,
it is.
But, like, tell me.
I'll make you bet
there are, there's good suits that are, well, that's a $5,000 suit that the politicians are wearing. I mean, I'm not talking about a guy out at the club.
You're not pulling off the rack at the, you know,
well,
Venture.
No. Well, Venture. At Venture, your suit would be $89.99.
I know.
It'd be like, you know, that's the Earl Scheib of suits.
Mm-hmm.
But even a really good suit at Barney's or something, I don't even know what a high-end store would be. I'm going to say Nordstrom, but I know even that's only under $1,000. Are there suits? I mean, I remember.
Oh, yeah,
Got who got the haircut? Was it Bill Clinton? The haircut on the tarmac that cost $500 once or something like that? They held up traffic at an airport.
Well, I don't
was
think
that Bill Clinton?
Clinton? No.
Was it John Edwards? Somebody got a very expensive haircut once.
I don't think it was Clinton.
I thought it was Bill Clinton.
No.
But.
I remember that. My gosh. That was... long time
and ago. I know women's clothes are more expensive and there's more variation. It's not just, although with Hillary, there's not a lot of variation, but, you know, guys are wearing a suit. That's what they're wearing. So it's simple. And even if it's expensive, you can't tell it's that expensive, I don't think. That's why it's kind of a waste of money. Maybe in person you can, but on TV you can't. But she's wearing a $12,000
jacket. But here's the other thing.
Why aren't they thinking that through?
And I understand the point that you're making and they made. Is that she's talking about inequality and she's wearing this real expensive stuff.
Ridiculously
but if a guy candidate got up and gave the same speech, would anyone question the cost of his suit?
Because nobody would notice. They would. I don't believe this is a sexist thing at all.
I don't
think
wearing.
This is a sexist thing at all. This is a fact.
Well, but
neither did I, because I wouldn't know.
I wouldn't know how much anything costs.
Neither would I. But on a woman, you can figure it out because the clothing is so unique.
But
so
you can look it up. Why would you even care? That's what I'm saying.
It is relevant, Roger. I disagree. It is relevant. Don't be high and mighty talking about inequality while you're wearing a $12,000 coat.
That point,
that's
I understand.
Ridiculous.
But before you get to the point where, oh, look, it's a $12,000 coat or dress or whatever. Your mind wouldn't even get to that because that would not be something you would be thinking. Oh, she's talking about inequality. I wonder
matter.
How much
it doesn't
that
matter. But people
dresses.
That don't believe in Hillary or don't like Hillary are going to look for things, and I don't blame them. And I do think, as a Hillary supporter, it's ridiculous that she's wearing a $12,000 coat at any time. You're running for president. You want to be of the people. You're of the party that tries to cater to the less fortunate, the people that need help. You're sticking up for these people wearing your $12,000 coat. What the hell are you doing? That's stupid.
That part.
And you have every right. You've made your money and you've paid your dues and you speak and you earn money. And I don't hold against her the money she's made speaking at Goldman Sachs or writing the books or anything. They lived public servant lives for a long time. And as you get older, if you can make your money, make your money. Good for you. I hope they have plenty to retire and things like that. I don't think that precludes any of the other thing. I don't think Trump being a billionaire precludes him from being a good public servant. That's not my issue with either of them. But to speak out on these things and fight for this while you're wearing your $12,000 coat just seems disingenuous. And more importantly, it seems like somebody on staff isn't paying attention. How is somebody not saying, you know what, I love this speech and these are good things you're saying. What the hell is with that coat? We can't look like this. People will notice. People are paying attention to every single little thing you do. You can't wear that jacket and give this speech. There you go. There's your crooked Hillary. I hope that helps you out. And yes, Aaron M. Cardle, I am a Hillary supporter in that she will be getting my vote before Donald Trump does. I'll tell you what, Bernie started winning me over a little bit. And I know that makes me feel a little crazy inside to say that. It does, because Bernie's crazy. Free college. You know, my son loves Bernie. Free college. Yes. But you know, he did this video with Mark Ruffalo. Mark Ruffalo from the Spotlight movie.
Yeah.
And they're walking around Brooklyn where Bernie grew up, and he's talking about a lot of these things. And when you actually stop and listen to him talk, a lot of it makes sense. He's like, hey, back when I went to school, school didn't cost. I mean, think about one of the biggest things in the lives of parents with younger kids is the insane
school education,
college education costs and how much it has gone through the roof. And I don't expect college ever to be free. But Bernie was arguing that there was a time in America where parents weren't paying ridiculous amounts of money for college. And I do think that it has grown in such a drastic way, more than inflation or the cost of living has grown, that it's making it almost impossible. And we're creating a huge swath of kids that will come out with insane amounts of debt, or kids that will never go to college in the same way that they would have 20 or 30 years ago, because it's just too expensive to even take on. And that's unfortunate, and something should be done about that. Now, should it be free? That has this bad connotation. Maybe it shouldn't be free. Maybe kids should have to work their way through it or something. But it should be affordable for people to not feel like my child can't do that, or they can do that, but now I'm going to risk my retirement, or they can do that, but they'll be paying off their college loans till after they're 40. There are many 40-year-olds paying off college loans. That's ridiculous. There's something wrong with that system. Now, you can say, well, just don't go. There's plenty of jobs otherwise, and this and that and this and that. But I think we would all like the idea of our kids being able to attend the college they want to attend or pursue what they want to pursue, not feel like as 18-year-olds, I have to decide. You know, when I was 18 and I was lucky enough, my parents were able to send me to a private Catholic college, and the cost now of that college versus the cost then is insane, as it is with every other college. It was expensive back then. State school would have been much cheaper. But even our state schools cost an insane amount of money. And so there's a crazy amount of pressure on our kids to know exactly what they want to do. If you want to go to the University of Illinois, what are you going to study? Why are we spending that money? Why aren't you at a less expensive school? Why would we send you to DePaul or to Notre Dame or to any of these schools that cost a real large chunk of money? I mean, you're talking and spending $250,000 on a four-year education in some places.
That's right.
That's insane.
Yeah. No, it's.
And unless there's an incredibly specific, my son Jack is in love right now with Michigan State.
Uh-oh.
If you're not a resident of Michigan, that's costing us $45,000 to $50,000 a year.
It's double what an in-state person would pay, at least.
Insane.
Yeah.
Right? But Jack loves Michigan State, loves their broadcasting school, and really wants to go there.
Yep.
So do I just say, well, I'm sorry, bud, I'm not doing that because I'm not mortgaging our future and you shouldn't mortgage yours based on the fact that you like that school? That's sad that we have to say, if you don't know exactly why you're doing it or what you're doing, then there's no reason to go to those places.
We made the same comment to our daughter. Same thing. She wanted the exact same thing. She wanted to go to Michigan State. Got accepted. But we couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
So she had to go in-state. In Illinois. She went to Illinois State for a couple of years and then moved back to Chicago and finished at UIC.
Yeah.
It's extreme. But one of the contributors to that is that the state, over the decades, has been paying less of our tax dollars to the universities and requiring the universities to increase costs,
mm-hmm.
fees, and tuition to the individual students. That's one of the problems. And they haven't been able to, I mean, you can't suddenly say, well, all right, since we're getting less money from the state, we're raising tuition by 100%.
Yeah.
You can't do that. No one's going to go to your school.
But tuition has gone up an insane amount. There's no doubt. 773 writes, I wish I could get an interest-free college Parent Plus loan. $135,000 loan balance for two kids and one kid waiting in the wings. The other two have full student loans. Accrued interest is a killer. Yeah, I feel bad for them. That's terrible. 606 says, yeah, it made sense in Venezuela. Look at them now. 708's mad at me about the Hillary thing. You want four more years of what we had for the past 8 years? What about her being a thief, a liar? And she could have prevented people getting murdered. Four more years like we had with Obama. No thanks. I still like you regardless. Your show is great. Thank you so much, Aaron. I appreciate that. And I don't believe anything that you just said. I don't believe. Listen, she's a liar. Okay. She's a liar in my mind, like every single politician is a liar. She's certainly not as bad of a liar as her husband was. And I liked him as president. I don't believe the rest of it, I think, is just the talking points that keep getting repeated over and over. And if she's as bad as everybody wants to say, I think there'd be more prosecution and things like that. I don't know. Both sides spin it so hard. I don't know what to think. I think that all in all, as politicians go, I can handle her. So I'm with her as it comes to this election. I'm not voting for Trump. And Hillary's not my favorite person. And if there was a different Republican candidate, maybe I'd cast my first Republican presidential vote. I don't know. But everybody keeps saying, Obama, oh, four more years of this, eight more years of this. Yeah. If Obama's running for president, I'm voting for him. I'd put him in for eight more years. I think he's the best president we've had in my lifetime. Take that. You're all going to hate that one. Matt Bubala here with you on Radio 720 WGN. We'll get to Heidi Stevens in a couple of minutes. I just wanted to address a couple things because I'm getting a lot of texts. People are all over me about my support of President Obama. Eight more years? What are you, crazy? This has been the worst 8 years ever. How could you support him? What has he ever done that was positive? So let me just say this. Over the last 8 years, President Obama has been eloquent. He's made our country, I believe, more inclusive. Now, maybe he's made it more divisive, too, because there are people who really are anti everything he has done, and they have gotten stronger and stronger and suddenly created a Donald Trump candidacy out of that. But I will say that President Obama has created a very inclusive America. I think we've made incredible strides over the last 8 years to be more inclusive and more accepting of all Americans. I worry that we're going to tip back the other way here in a few months, but I do believe he's done that. I believe the economy is better than it was 8 years ago. All you screaming, oh, the economy sucks. The economy doesn't suck. The economy has sucked a million times worse than this, like when he took office. Gas prices have been really low. And this isn't all his doing, but when you're in office, you get credit, you get blame. So we're going to give him these things. Gas prices are incredibly low. They're creeping back up, which kind of sucks, but they're incredibly low. The stock market has done well over the 8 years he's been here. A lot of things have gone very well. Now, it's not where we'd like it to be. And you can argue, oh, the economy isn't great because these jobs aren't real jobs, but unemployment is relatively low. There's a lot of good things, I believe, happening in our country. There has not been a terrorist attack on our soil. I don't blame the last one on President Bush, but I do believe that when we prevent them from happening, that's a good thing. I know things happen overseas, but we've protected the homeland relatively well. It's not perfect, but we've done a good job. His failures, yeah, like every president, he does have some. Obamacare has not been the success I would hope it would have been. But he tried to do something and got something done. And if it's gotten insurance for Americans that never would have had it, I do think that's a good thing. It's had my costs for insurance go through the roof, and that sucks. But I'm hoping that it gets better down the road. He has not taken away all the guns. Everybody's screaming about he's coming for your guns and Hillary's coming for your guns. He's failed miserably in that aspect because more guns have been sold in his presidency. And on the previous Black Thursday, we were setting records for gun sales. Guns are everywhere. So if you're anti-gun, you should be pro-Obama because he hasn't done a job of taking any of them away from you. I do think he's failed to enact sensible gun laws. We need sensible gun laws. And yes, we have to prosecute the gun laws we have and we have to do this and that. I'm sorry, but the NRA has to at some point not control our lives when it comes to guns. And right now they control the politicians that make it impossible to enact any sensible gun laws. Why do you need an automatic machine gun? Why do you need all the different things that we have that make the mass killings possible? Why do there need to be so many millions of guns? It's harder to get a driver's license. It's harder to do a million different things than it is to have a gun. And as President Obama said, there was a PBS town hall meeting he did in Indiana recently. And afterwards, he stuck around to take some questions. And this has been floating around the internet. He took a question from a man who looked shockingly like Spike Odell, I believe it was. There was that picture going around last week where people were like, Spike, is that you? And the man asked him, President Obama, why do you want to take the guns away? And he's like, oh, God, stop it, because everybody has guns and I haven't taken any away. But he said that, the NRA has made it impossible to enact any sensible gun legislation. And he said that he just had a meeting that day with advisors about ISIS stuff and the no-fly list. He said, I can put people on no-fly lists. We can prevent known ISIS sympathizers, people that have gone on, he always says ISIL, I don't know why, instead of ISIS, people that go on their websites and known sympathizers, we can prevent them from getting on a plane, but we cannot stop them from going to a gun show and buying as much guns and ammo as they want. Cannot be done because of the NRA. I think that is a problem that he didn't fix, and it's not clearly not going to be fixed no matter who gets elected and whether you think it needs to be fixed or not. I do think there has been a lot of positive things done in the last 8 years, and he carries himself incredibly well in the face of all the attacks he's had on him and his presidency and his wife and his family. He has carried himself incredibly well. And I will say this, I believe President Bush did as well. As much as I didn't like President Bush's policies, I overall liked him as a person, and I think he carried the presidency well. Bill Clinton was a stain on the presidency. I believe he was a good president economically and a lot of the policies, but he was a ridiculous liar who brought shame to the Oval Office, and I believe he should have resigned. As much as I might vote for him were he running today, I'm saddened by what he brought to the Oval Office. So I go all over the place on these things. It's not hardcore one way or the other. Donald Trump would be a stain on the presidency. I firmly believe that. Nobody will have carried themselves as badly as he would. And maybe you could say, oh, 100 years ago, this guy was even worse. Well, 100 years ago, not everybody saw everything somebody did every 4 minutes of the day. We probably learned about most of it 50 years after they were president. Like with JFK, there were awful things he was and did, but he didn't have to go on public on TV and lie about it like Clinton did. So there's differences there in how we remember those people. President Obama has been a good president. I'm sorry if you feel differently. That's your opinion. And I will fight to the death for your right to say it, or whatever Voltaire said. It's the Matt Bubala Show on Radio 720 WGN. There's a column in the Chicago Tribune called The Balancing Act. It's written by my favorite writer over there, Heidi Stevens. She joins us on the phone right now. How are you this morning, Heidi?
Good. How are you doing, Matt?
Good. Thank you very much for jumping on the phone. You had a really poignant piece. It's online already. It'll be in your Sunday Chicago Tribune. The headline reads, Chicago, should I stay or should I go? And Heidi, I imagine it's a conversation that a lot of people have had that live within the city limits, especially with of course, the crime has gotten worse and worse and worse. But I think, it's terrible to say we've tolerated it, but I think that it's been in neighborhoods where a lot of people don't live. And so it's a terrible problem that should be fixed, but it hasn't affected people personally. And it seems like this year it's affecting people more and more personally in so many different areas. And it's getting to the point with everything going on between the school system and the police department and everything else, where I imagine there's a lot of people who've gotten to the point where they've sat and reflected upon this like you did.
Yeah, that's just it. It's a perfect storm of a whole bunch of factors. It's not just the crime. It's not just the schools. It's not just the financial woes of the entire state. It's all of them sort of cascading onto us at once. And a lot of people are having this conversation. I'm having it with a lot of my friends and some of them who were born and raised here in the city and thought they would never, ever consider leaving, are thinking about pulling up roots and leaving the state or moving to the suburbs. And we're all sort of, hesitant to even open up the topic for discussion. And at the same time, we kind of can't talk about anything else because it is top of mind.
And it, you start out the article talking about just the other day in your neighborhood, not far from your home, I'm guessing, a six-year-old girl was shot.
Right.
That was just a random weird thing, or what happened there?
Well, the night it happened, there weren't a whole lot of details. As the week progressed, we learned a little bit more. She was playing in front of actually her aunt's house, not her own house. And there was apparently a birthday party inside for some gang members and either a rival gang or I'm not certain, but some other gang members drove by and in retaliation opened fire on the people outside of the house, and she was the only one to get hit. And she survived, thank God. But right near a park that we frequent, a couple nights before that, two men were shot on Armitage right by the Tasty Freeze that we also frequent. These shootings are happening everywhere. They're happening on Lakeshore Drive, on the lakefront. The woman a couple weeks ago walking out of the Starbucks a block from police headquarters at 4 in the afternoon. It's not, I don't think anybody's under the impression anymore that if you stay out of certain areas or if you aren't out alone or if you aren't out in the middle of the night that you're fine. I think all of us at this point are realizing that, like, it could kind of be anybody at any time of day.
That, I really think you've hit on something there, Heidi, because I remember as recently as 2 years ago, when we'd hear the stories about the shootings, I would always be stunned, and I don't think this got talked about that much, that when a child got shot, you'd hear later in the story at 11 p.m. or at 2 a.m. Out on the porch, and maybe that's because we're in areas that don't have air conditioning, so people are forced out of their house in the hot summer.
Yeah.
But you'd also be like, why are kids out? At this time now,
right.
These stories more and more often, the neighborhoods are different. The time of day is insane. We're on roads now, and it's just infecting the city and now really starting to scare people more and more. And so you end up saying, okay, at what point do we say, no, this is my town, this is my city, I'm going to stay here and fight for it. And when do you say, I have young kids and I'm not taking chances on this?
That's the, million-dollar question, because I have said for years when friends of mine have asked either who live in the suburbs or who live in altogether different states, why do you stay? What's appealing about it? And I have always admitted the city's warts. I've lived here for 18 years. I'm not blind to it. And I've been in all sorts of neighborhoods. I've lived near Pilsen, South Loop, Wicker Park in the 90s, which was certainly not what it is today. And my conviction was always, I wanna do my part to make it better. I don't want the city to be the place that I lived in my 20s so I could bar hop and have fun. And then once it's time to put roots down and pay property taxes, I flee for the burbs. I love this city. I want to do what I can to make it better. I want to send my kids to the schools. I want to live in the boundaries. I want to do all of that. And I still really firmly believe that. That's my value system. At the same time, I have kids I've got to look out for. And, how in good conscience can you let your kids play on a sidewalk in front of a house in the same neighborhood where a girl's getting shot at 8 p.m. playing on the sidewalk in front of her aunt's house? That's a hard one to grapple with.
Has it changed the way you live in your neighborhood now since these shootings have happened? Are you making sure the kids are not in the front yard at certain times? Or are you staying inside the house at night? Has it, fully taken hold that now I have to think about everything we're doing?
It's starting to, and especially as summer arrives. I mean, Chicago typically gets more violent in the summer, and we've been in a little bit of a bubble. We're on a quiet block within a neighborhood that has trouble spots, but, we haven't seen crime on our specific block other than your random, our tires got stolen off our car one night, which is not fantastic, but it's, you know, nobody's hurt.
Right.
But sure, I'm starting to wonder about it, and I'm starting to make sure we're all back inside at night. And I don't, you know, I don't let my daughter, you know, she's old enough to ride her bike alone. I don't let her turn a corner where I can't see her at all times. And that feels a little icky. It feels like not a complete childhood. If you can't ride your bike around a block, you have to ride it in a straight line up and down.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's giving her the freedom that she deserves. And when my son's old enough to do that, that'll be the freedom he deserves. And at the same time, even as I say that, I'm fully aware how privileged that sounds to assume that my children deserve freedom that other kids in the city will never have. And so that's hard too. I don't want to be the mom who's like, oh, my kids deserve better. We're out of here.
Well, all the kids deserve better. And if the people living in the neighborhoods could move, I'm sure that they would, especially in the really rough neighborhoods. I mean, but they can't, right? So do you say, well, I don't want to be that person, so we'll stay? Or do you say, you know, unfortunately for the other people, I can make these choices, and so I will. I think it's such a tough decision to make, and it's such a tough discussion to have. But, you know, Heidi, I live way out west in a relatively quiet town, and just in the last year we let our 10-year-old kids start riding more on their own and not knowing where they are. I think it's a change we've had in parenting since you and I were kids, when the street, you know, I was out till the streetlights came on. They had no idea where I was.
Right.
I mean, it was crazy to think back. And,
totally.
And now we don't do that. And especially in the city where you are, I can't imagine how helicoptery we would be if we had our kids around there and trying to deal with the extra concerns that would be going on, because the crime is real and it is happening. Here it's, you know, we're scared if there's a van and what could be happening, and we worry about things that maybe don't necessarily happen. You're in an area where you're seeing it happen, you're reading about it happening, and it's very tough to make those decisions. We're speaking with Heidi Stevens. She writes The Balancing Act in your Chicago Tribune. This article on Chicago and Should I Stay or Should I Go will be in your Chicago Tribune on Sunday. You can find it online right now at chicagotribune.com. You can follow Heidi on Twitter at HeidiStevens13. When we come back, well, with any big decision, I think you make a pros and cons list. What are the pros and cons right now of living in Chicago? We'll talk about that a little more next. Matt Bubala with you on Radio 720 WGN. We're speaking with Heidi Stevens from your Chicago Tribune. This is Matt Bubala with you on Radio 720 WGN. Heidi writes The Balancing Act in your Chicago Tribune. And this Sunday, when the paper hits the porch, there'll be an article titled Chicago, Should I Stay or Should I Go? And Heidi, who lives in the city and has with her husband and kids, is debating whether or not, maybe with the shootings and it hitting a little closer to home lately, maybe it is time to move out of the city. So, Heidi, I know that, you know, it's a lot of playground talk and talk that you have with people, and it's hard to avoid it. Do you start, I mentioned pros and cons lists, do you start talking about those things? Do you think those things in your head about why should we stay and why should we go?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think it's sort of all we are thinking about and talking about right now. And it's the crime, as we talked about. It's also the school situation. I mean, there are $1 billion in debt. The teachers are threatening to strike at any moment, and I support their right to do that. I don't know, you know, between the two things, how to, you know, calm our fears about whether this is the best place to raise kids. So certainly we're making pros and cons lists in our heads and out loud to each other, my husband and I, if not necessarily writing them down. The city is a lovely, diverse place in many, many ways. And a lot of the things that I've loved about it since I moved here in the 90s are still true. And we like going to playgrounds and hearing people speak all different languages. We like that my kids go to a public school where the classrooms are diverse, and they have friends who, you know, sure, some of them go to the Swiss Alps in spring break, and some of them get free breakfast and free lunch every day, and it's diverse in every single way it can be diverse, and I think that's a wonderful way to grow up. I think it gives you a great worldview and great perspective, and I don't want to remove my kids from that sort of setting. At the same time, I want to be a responsible parent who's looking at the full picture and saying, like, yeah, but is this safe? Is this healthy? Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I think that's the biggest thing that my kids miss by living out in the suburbs is diversity. They go to school with, maybe 3 African-American kids in the whole school, maybe some Asian kids, but, I mean, it's 98% white. And pretty much everybody they know is just some white Caucasian person like us. And we're missing out on that terribly. And I think that is an incredible thing to be able to have your kids grow up learning about the world, about the different cultures. And that's so important for the next generation of kids, especially in the climate we're living in right now with this presidential election, is letting people know about each other and their beliefs and their systems and their cultures and growing up, getting along. I think that will go a million miles to making our world a better place.
I think so, too. It's one of the biggest things to us and how we want our kids to be raised. And certainly, you know, open-minded, progressive parents can instill those values and teach those lessons in their kids. But it's really nice to have your kids just living those lessons. For example, the principal at my kid's school is an African-American woman. The assistant principal is an African-American man. They have teachers who are Indian, they have teachers who are Asian, they have, you know, friends who are from every religion and socioeconomic and cultural background that you can possibly come up with in your head. And so they just are learning those values by living them, by being friends with them, by being taught by, you know, all different types of people, rather than learning it in the abstract, like some sort of, you know, anthropological lesson, like, of course, all people are equal. Well, it's like they would look at you like you were cross-eyed if you'd said that. Like, well, why wouldn't we think all people are equal? You know, we live that every day.
Yeah.
And I adore that. And it breaks my heart to think about putting my kids in a situation where that's not the case. Then again, we have these very real kind of terrifying problems that I don't see any solutions to. I don't see any leaders in place right now that are offering solutions. And I think that's the other part of this conversation that a lot of people are having. It's like, you know, cities are messy places. And I'm not talking about, you know, litter. I'm talking about, you know,
politics,
getting all sorts of people to get along and prioritizing everybody's needs and wants and all of that. That can be a messy thing. It takes a certain type of leader to make them function, and other cities are doing it pretty well, and we're just not right now. And that's hard to get your head around too.
It is, and it's tough because if you leave, then you're doing nothing to stay there and fight for it. You can't truly affect change. You can't vote anymore in the city elections, and you'd have just kind of less of an active voice in it, no matter whether you're writing a column or not, if you're not living it, right? But at the same time, your kids are kids only for so long, and this is not going to change overnight. So what do? You know, I have friends who keep telling me, oh, if Trump becomes president, was a friend of mine who's Canadian by birth, and she's like, I'm going back to Canada if Trump. And I get mad at her. I'm like, you know, stop it with that, because you're not moving to Canada, because that would be the worst thing you could do. If you, you know, are upset about something, you stay and you fight for what's right, and you don't run away from it.
Yeah.
But this is not the same, because there's not kids involved in that. There's kids involved in this in such a direct way. And, you know, as parents, we've only got so much time to protect them and give them the best we can. And I don't envy you having to balance that out and worry about it. And it's sad that, you know, it's terrible that we're having this conversation now, that it's affecting neighborhoods where people that are a little wealthier live, and that all of us haven't been more outraged in the last 5 or 10 years. Even though there's been outrage and upset about it, we don't stand up and truly do anything about it. And I don't know what we could do, but it's you know, maybe the only way the city really gets affected is when the people who are paying a lot of money in taxes and really have money to spend in the city start saying, well, we're not going to stay in the city anymore. Maybe that's the only way to get the attention of the powers that be to say, how are we going to change this before we really lose, you know, the economic drivers of the city? It's sad to say, but that's what's going to change things from the ground up, right, is the city start, you know, the city's already losing population. the city starts losing tax money, everything else already so far in the hole in every way possible. When you're having conversations with your friends about this and everybody's kind of having that same concern, does anybody say, I wish this, you know, we all have the worries. Does anybody have the, boy, if this would just happen, or, but I really love this, I'd never leave because of this. Is the pros list ever outweighing the cons list, other than the diversity, other than we love this area and we love our city?
Yeah, it's interesting. I definitely heard, I heard from a ton of people today because the piece went online around, I would say, maybe 11 or noon today. And so there's, there's already been a few hours for people to react. And I heard from, you know, mostly people who said, I'm having this exact same conversation. Mm-hmm. Thanks for putting in words. But I did hear from some people who said, you know, I hear you. I kind of agree, but I'm not going anywhere. And, you know, part of it is, you know, loyalty and love for the city. One guy said, I don't want to be part of white flight, which is an interesting perspective. Although I have to say that I have a lot of friends of color who are leaving the city, and there's plenty of research showing that, you know, African-American families and other families of color are fleeing the city too. So this isn't necessarily a white people, you know, heading to Winnetka conversation.
I would imagine
it's bigger than that.
Now it's a socioeconomic thing, right? We can afford to not live here, so we're not going to take the chance on it. I would imagine what's going on, right?
Right. And people are moving to cheaper cities. I mean, it's not all that affordable to live in Chicago. It's more affordable to live in Atlanta, for example, or some cities in Texas. I mean, Houston's growing, right, by leaps and bounds while we shrink. This isn't like the 60s. But I definitely did hear from people who said, you know, stay, I'm staying. I love my kids' school. And I love my kids' school too. I love the lake. I love, you know, the diversity. I love being able to bike everywhere. I don't want to live in the suburbs and live in my car. I don't. You brought up the van earlier. I heard from one dad who said every time I'm out with my friends from work who live in the suburbs, they're frantically checking their phones about, like, alerts of creepy vans near kids' schools. Like, you know, it's not as though the suburbs are crime-free, and I don't think anyone is under that impression. So a lot of people are having that conversation too, I think. You know, what do we trade from this life that we like a lot to a life where, you know, things are better, but they're not idyllic?
You know, I think it's interesting. I don't have any data to back this up, but Heidi, I would guess that out here in the burbs, we helicopter way more than you do in the city because you're just around more. So you get used to more. And think about this. You're thinking about moving because children have been shot blocks from your home. Out here, I mean, people would lose it. That would never be. So we're talking about it. People would be boarding up and, you know, torching their backyards if kids were getting shot out here. I mean, we're freaked out by anything out here. So it's a whole different system. And when you say these dads are checking their phones about alerts, we're probably all doing that out here, and probably it's almost never actually the case. I mean, of course, sometimes it is. It is a dangerous world, but by and large, it's Mayberry out here compared to where you live, right? Compared to any city that has a lot of people and has different, economic levels and things like that. So it's
totally. It is and it isn't. I mean, and this is going back to the pros and cons list that we're all sort of, you know, mentally making anyway. I often ask myself about the risks in the suburbs that we don't have here. I don't, you know, I have a 15-year-old stepson. I don't worry about him getting in the car with a drunk driver because none of his friends drive. Like, he's in high school and kids here don't drive. They Uber or they take the L. And, like, in the suburbs, I will freak out when my kids become teenagers about drunk driving. I just will. Yeah. I remember being in high school. I know how many kids get behind the wheel drunk. There are things like that. School shootings are certainly not limited to urban areas. In fact, they mostly happen in, wealthy suburban areas.
And so the heroin issue in the suburban areas is probably
heroin,
insanely
exactly.
So no matter, there's no perfect setting, right? I mean, there's going to be concerns anywhere you go.
Right.
They're just hitting so close to home right now for you and for everybody within the city of Chicago. So in the end, what do you do? How do you figure out what to do? Is it just a gut feeling that finally comes or goes, or how do you think you guys will decide what to do?
I don't know. And to be honest, that's why I hesitated to write this piece, because I thought I'm unsettled about this. What am I going to say? Yeah. I don't know. I don't have a decision to present. I don't have guidance to offer. I'm just lost. And so I thought, what am I really adding?
I think that's okay, Heidi. What you're adding is a relief to everybody else who's thinking the same thing, that they're not alone, that it's a scary time, and that sometimes you don't know what to do, and you just start talking about it, and eventually you'll figure out, hey, we're just going to stay, or we're going to go, or something will happen that presents itself to you that makes you feel like it's the right choice to make either way. But I applaud you for talking about it, because I think it's on a lot of people's minds, and it's something that needs to be talked about, and city leaders need to hear that people are talking about, should we even stay in the city anymore?
Yeah.
Because they're not, you know, it's not getting any better right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it is. And thank you for saying that. And I think that that was ultimately what pushed me into the decision to go ahead and write something, even without a clear, you know, and so here's what I've decided to do. Because I hear so many people having this conversation. I watch it play out on Facebook. I hear it on playgrounds. I know it's happening all around. And I thought, you know, there's something to tap into here. And the mayor and the governor and the alderman and the Cook County commissioners and everybody should be aware that this conversation is happening, because I think the city could rebound. You know, I think it could be a turning point. It could also be the beginning of a downward spiral. An even further downward spiral. And the residents can only do so much. You know, you need good leaders.
Yeah, absolutely. Heidi Stevens writes about it in your Sunday Chicago Tribune. Find the Balancing Act column or check it out at the Chicago Tribune at chicagotribune.com. And make sure you follow Heidi on Twitter at HeidiStevens13, where she'll give you some of the best comments that people make about her column, so you don't have to search for them. And that's a whole separate conversation. I always enjoy when you post one or two on Facebook or on Twitter of something awful somebody said, because people just love that mask of anonymity that we get when we get to put in the comments section. It's so much fun to be so mean to people.
Yep. I know.
All right. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone, Heidi.
Yep. Thanks for having me, Matt.
Well, I'd love to know, is this a conversation that you've had around the dinner table? Are you talking about anything the same? Let's talk about this a little more after the news. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala with you on Radio 720 WGN.
This Sunday, June 12th, Dish Network may force WGN-TV off your lineup. So you'll miss coverage of the Cubs' best season in years, the White Sox, and Chicago's very own top-rated local news. Call Dish now at 855-YES-WGN-9. That's 855-YES-WGN-9. And tell them, don't let WGN-TV Dish appear.
Lou Manfredini here. You know, as we age, stairs can become a challenge. But a Bruno stair lift is an easy and affordable solution. Bruno has manufactured high-quality, dependable stair lifts in Wisconsin for decades. Call Access, your local preferred Bruno dealer and the Midwest leader in home accessibility for over 25 years. They'll come to your home, discuss your options, and give a free quote. Call 844-IL-LIFTS or go to accessbruno.com. Mention Lou for 10% off your stair lift. That's accessbruno.com.
June is National Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder Awareness Month. PTSD is a condition that impacts many veterans and their families. The Lovell Federal Healthcare Center wants veterans to know that you are not alone and help is readily available. Lovell Federal Healthcare has many convenient locations to serve veterans. Our campus in North Chicago, outpatient clinics in Evanston, McHenry, and Kenosha, where you'll find compassionate, veteran-centered, and evidence-based therapy. Visit lovell.fhcc.va.gov.
You deserve a home mortgage without the stress. Townstone Financial guarantees it. 312-896-2111, townstone.com.
Townstone Financials is an Illinois mortgage licensee, 6629 and NMLS 1366-39.
Oh, why, hello there. Are you hot? You will be later today, won't you? Because As Roger's been reporting all morning, the feels like temperature going to get up to about 100 today. So this could be your lucky day. Air Water Energy is giving you an opportunity to win a free air conditioner tune-up and inspection. The cool part is that it's only being offered to you night owls over in DuPage County. Enter to win a free air conditioner tune-up. If you're a homeowner living in DuPage County, visit theawefactor.com. That's the awe factor, A-W-E, theawefactor.com. Click the red radio promotion bar and enter special code AWESOME. You can say it like that as you type it. I think you should go AWESOME as you type it. Every day, some lucky DuPage County homeowner wins. It's a $129 value. Air Water Energy, the most trusted name in DuPage County for air conditioning, heating, plumbing, and energy. Visit theawefactor.com, click the red radio promo bar, enter special code AWESOME for your chance to win. That's theawefactor.com, A-W-E, theawefactor.com. It's getting light outside. It's only 4:52, but it's getting brighter out. We're only, Shante, we're only a week away. We're 10 days away from the longest day of the year. In just 10 days or so, it's going to start getting darker little by little by little. How can we already be at the point where it's already going to? Oh, God, it's so crazy to think about just when it finally heats up. Then you're saying, okay, and your longest day's over, and the year trudges on. I want to jump back over to Hillary and Bernie for a second. We talked a lot about Trump earlier. We talked about Hillary. We debated the presidents. The Hillary-Bernie thing. Bernie will not give up. And CNN and AP and everybody are saying, okay, it's Hillary. It's over. It's Hillary. But Bernie's not giving up. So why wouldn't Bernie just pack it in? And, you know, if we're going to need support, you know, they have a big fight ahead of them. If their biggest goal is to stop Trump, then isn't it time for him to just kind of pack it in and go, okay, Hillary, you're in, and let's figure this out together. So the way it's being counted is she has 2,784 delegates. Bernie has 1,877 delegates. That is counting the superdelegates. If we go only by how many they have won, the delegates they have won and who are bound to vote for them in the convention, Hillary has 2,203 pledged delegates. Bernie has 1,828. That's of the ones that they've won in the primaries that have to vote for them. That's a 375 delegate difference. When you count in the superdelegates, which are people in the Democratic Party who get votes that they get to do whatever they want with, Hillary has 581 of those, making her total 2,784. The number of delegates you need to clinch the nomination is 2,383. Bernie only has 49 superdelegates, which puts him at 1,877. So she has a 900-ish, 800-ish. Almost a 900 delegate lead. She has about a 300. She has a 375 delegate lead in actual delegates, but she has almost a 900 delegate lead when you count in all the superdelegates. So if you count the superdelegates, she's over the top. She's the winner. But they can change their minds. They don't have to vote for Hillary at the convention. Bernie, not dropping out of the race, may be taking time to see if he can't work people up into saying, all right, I'll switch over to you, Bernie. Now, that could make for a fractious Democratic convention, and maybe that's not good for the party. But Bernie has, I mean, it's really close. When you think about it, 2,203 to 1,828, there's only, 20 delegates left to win. So she is going to beat him in the voted delegates as well as the superdelegates. So I would think he's got a tough time going to the superdelegates saying, you really should switch to me, when they're like, well, more people did vote for her than you, so why should we switch? And his one defense could be, because polls show I will beat Trump, and they're not necessarily showing that Hillary will. So could the superdelegates be convinced to switch over to Bernie if the polls are showing that Bernie will win and keep Democrats in control, whereas Hillary might lose? I don't think it's going to change. He's run a good campaign. He's energized a lot of people. Now, will his energy and those people become Hillary supporters when and if and when Bernie finally drops out of the race? That will remain to be seen, but it looks like there will be a Bernie Sanders at the convention, maybe not having given up. We won't know for a while yet, but everybody will keep us entertained in the meantime. 312-981-7200. Couple of comments on Heidi Stevens and the debate, and I credit her with being public with the idea of worrying about whether or not she should move her kids out of the city. 224 says, move to Evanston. It is diverse with good schools and a diverse population. Teenagers take public transportation also. A lot of other texts, a lot of really nasty texts. I really brought it out of people tonight. Thank you all for being with us, as always, on the show.